We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we work and live, the Awabakal and Worimi people, and pay our respects to elders past and present. We celebrate the stories, culture, and traditions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders of all communities who also work and live on this land.
You're listening to Boob to Food, the podcast with Luca McCabe and Kate Holm. There is so much noise in the parenting space.
And we don't mean the tantruming toddler. We understand it can feel confusing, conflicting, and overwhelming.
That's why we are bringing our years of experience as a midwife, nutritionist, and naturopath.
And of course, mums.
So that you can confidently navigate the roller coaster of motherhood from boob to food and beyond.
Each week, you'll hear practical wisdom, expert advice, and inspirational stories of other mums in the depths of this parenting journey.
Let's dive in.
Today's episode is brought to you by Taste Bubs. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the last episode of Boob to Food, the podcast ever.
No.
I just woke up, Imogen, sorry. Last one for the year. We thought today we would do a wrap up of all of your questions. We did a question box on Boob to Food, and we often answer that on Instagram, but we thought it might be fun just to do it on here. And it's a mix of food questions, a mix of lifestyle, mum, a bit of everything really. So that'll be fun. What have you got planned for Christmas? I can't believe it's in a week.
I know. It's crazy. I honestly feel like it was January yesterday. We're just staying local for Christmas. We have Bowie's birthday just after Christmas as well, the poor girl. So we've got, just like extended family Christmas here. Mike will have some time off work and hopefully we'll get to relax. And then in the new year, we're taking the van away again, which is really exciting. Yeah. So nothing so much over Christmas. I just feel like it feels really big having Bowie's birthday soon after as well. So it's like, we do the Christmas, you know, extended family Christmas and then family, like Christmas Day Christmas and then her birthday. And so just try to keep it semi-low key because otherwise everybody feels overwhelmed with gifts and outings and all of that kind of stuff. And it's nice to just like have slow days and go to the beach and see friends who, especially now, like so many of our friends, their kids are at school, so we don't get to see them heaps outside of school holidays. So yeah, that'll be us. How about you?
Yeah, about the same really. Jessie's picking up our new caravan this week.
Exciting.
Yes. And so, yeah, literally gets home, I think, the day before Christmas Eve. And then we split our Christmas so that we don't have to alternate between families and or do two in one day. So we always do my husband's family on Christmas Eve and they're actually all coming to our house, which is nice. And then Christmas Day we go to my parents' house and that's always pretty chilled. They live at the beach. So
yeah.
And all my family live in England, so it's a very slow day. But yeah, that's about it for Christmas. So we're going in the van for New Year's Eve, the new van. And then we're home for 2 weeks and then in the school holidays we're going away for 2.5 weeks in the van again. So
yeah, we're like tag teaming with our time away.
I know. I have a love-hate relationship going away in the holidays, but it will be nice because, my son's at that age. If he doesn't see anyone in the day, he just whinges at me all day that he's bored. So we need to be camping with friends to keep him occupied now he's a little teenager.
Oh my gosh, crazy. Yeah, and I'm feeling like this is kind of our last. Like we don't have school holidays yet, but Jude starts school next year.
Yeah,
so I'm
Same
really
with Florence.
I just feel like we really want this time as a family because I know this is not true and there's like a lot of time in between, but it feels like once they start school, you like put them into school and then they pop out the other end as an 18-year-old and I'm just like, oh, he's basically 18 now.
Oh, it feels like that though. Like Flynn's going to year 3 next year and I'm like, when did that happen? I bought him some boardies for Christmas because he's just had a huge growth spurt finally. And I had to buy from him in the teenager section.
No.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I was like, where's his size? I was looking and all the nice brands sell it. Like they don't go past sort of age 8, 9.
Yeah.
And then, teenager shorts. Goodness. So I nearly cried. So I know. I feel like it is cliche what they say, but it is also true.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What are your kids getting for Christmas?
Oh, goodness. I am so bad with Christmas shopping. I have friends that like buy things through the sales throughout the year and put them away. I cannot do that. I just if I buy something, they get it basically straight away. So, I mean, unfortunately for Jude, he's getting a lot of the things that he needs for school. So he'll be getting a backpack. They're both getting a new water bottle. Mm-hmm. And then like, what, you know, like a board game for them to share. I'm trying to think what else is on the list. I want to get Bowie some like face paints. She had a face painter for the first time and loved it and was devastated that it washed off in the shower. Imogen's too little to know or care, but then we also have the thing of, well, if Santa brings presents for Jude and Bowie, then
yeah.
Santa has to bring something for Imogen. So I'm not entirely sure what that will be yet.
Just get stuff you want.
Yeah.
Cute clothes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think if they're getting – oh, and well, because Bowie's birthday is – like a few days later, so she'll be getting a bike for her birthday. And so then it's like, well, it's just, it's too much. And honestly, they get so many gifts from extended family that I know that all those things sound really boring that I'm giving my kids, but they just don't need toys. Like they're, and yeah, Jude just had a birthday in September. So yeah, it's kind of more practical things that they're getting. And then, yeah, we'll get, I'm sure, lots of gifts from everybody else. How about your kids?
What are they getting? Flynn is getting a Nintendo Switch.
Oh, because he was saving for it.
He's been saving for it. And good one. He actually is close to getting it, but I actually found one secondhand. Mm-hmm. So we got him that, which he is going to buy with his own money. And then we will give him just a game for that.
Yeah.
And I also got him like this ramp thing that you can pack up and down. We live on a laneway and there's like always, there's about 10-year-old boys out there all the time on their scooters and bikes.
So good.
Yeah, it's really fun. And so I got him like this ramp thing that he can put out and then bring back in to, I don't know, do jumps or whatever boys do.
Cool.
Yeah. I thought one toy that he's inside on and then one to keep him outside, so that'll be handy. And I got him a new drink bottle because he loses them.
What did you get?
I got him a Yeti as well.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. And then Florence, we got a bike, new bike.
Mm-hmm.
And
we're twins again.
yeah, true. And not much. Oh, a little tea set. And then Will, I actually still haven't bought him anything. Yeah. He doesn't need anything, but I have to get him something because the other kids, I mean, he will want something when he sees them opening it, but he has no idea about monetary value, thankfully. So I'll probably just get him a ball and like a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I really have this like love-hate relationship with gifting at this time of year or just in general, like no, not in general. I love giving gifts. That's one of my love languages for sure. I very much enjoy it. If I can think of something that someone would really love or, you know, really need, then it I think giving gifts is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I find this time of year so overwhelming, and especially when, you know, with very good intentions, lots of extended family who don't necessarily see the kids and know them or know what we have, they buy gifts, and I know it comes from a place of wanting to, yeah, like create some of that joy, but we just end up with so much stuff and we don't have heaps of storage. Like, you know, we've got already all the toys that they want and need, and a lot of the things that they're given, like those toys that have one specific thing that they do or like the flashing sounds and lights, and, you know, they're very entertaining, but for such a short amount of time. And so I just feel like super wasteful that we end up, you know, with a shed full of plastic stuff that even I was talking to a girlfriend and she was saying there's so many things that she ends up giving to, you know, like charities in their box brand new because like the kids get duplicates of things or it's just not something they want or need. So yeah, no, it's so tricky.
It is hard. You could always do the gift of an experience. I always think that's nice.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's so nice.
Yeah. My parents have done that before for Flynn, which was nice because he was at the age where he enjoyed it. But I know it is hard. I think I saw this on Bluey where they did like a clean out beforehand.
Yeah.
Did I see that on Bluey?
Mr. Monkey Jocks is the episode. I know it very well.
Anyway, so we started doing that with the kids like before Christmas because, you know, I say if you want new stuff, we need to do a clear out and gift some things that you don't use anymore or throw some stuff out if it's broken. And that is really good actually, just to do a bit of a clean out and get them motivated to do it because of the reason is they're getting something else. So
yeah,
I like doing that every year. So there you go. Well, watch that episode again, Mr. Monkey Jokes. Thanks, Bluey.
Bluey always for the win with parenting advice.
Oh my gosh, I love it. It was funny when we were recently away and it was just Boxtel was the only option for TV and, you know, so you can't really choose. And anyway, so I was like, oh, Bluey's on. So I found myself watching Bluey and the kids weren't even there.
Yeah, I love it.
But I just was like, this is such a good show, isn't it? Yeah, I learned so much. I was crying. I was laughing. I was like, learned a life lesson. I think it was that baby race episode. Oh, it's really sad.
I know. Yeah, that's definitely
if any mums haven't watched that one, you need to. Anyway, should we get into some questions?
Yes, let's do it. Oh, wait, before we do, with the podcast next year, we are coming back, don't worry. But we will be coming into your ears on a Wednesday instead of a Monday. And
purely because I want Mondays off. It's my only day with the kids.
It's fair enough. and it will be Wednesday, what did we say? The 3rd of January. Yep. The first Wednesday in January, we'll be back in your ears.
Yes. Yep, looking forward to it. We've got lots of episodes already lined up and recorded and
It's exciting year.
Exciting. So let's get into the questions. Mm-hmm. I won't say I could say who. I'll say the first name. So we're just going to go through and answer
some. What if
some.
We can't pronounce some of them? Well, we can probably just read the question.
Okay, well, someone.
Yeah, I mean, there's double ups too.
Someone has said they really want baby number two, but also secretly very scared how to manage this feeling.
I definitely felt nervous about, I don't know, all of those things like, oh, am I going to love another baby as much? Especially when it's going from one to two. I just like was. I couldn't imagine loving someone as much as I loved Jude and then feeling like, is it going to be bad for him? And I would just say, like, it's not going to be the case. Like, you do have so much more love in your heart. You will love your subsequent children just as much as your first child. And even though there's challenges, and I really struggle with this at the moment, I think the biggest thing that I'm finding now having three is – like I find it just so difficult when there's conflicting needs. And so if, you know, one or more children need something and maybe they're all crying or they all want me all at once, that I just find it very overwhelming and difficult to deal with. And Mike has had to remind me many times that we as a species wouldn't have multiple children if it wasn't okay to do so. It must be purposeful in some way, you know, whether it's learning that they have to wait their turn or that someone else's needs are important or I don't know. These are all the things I'm telling myself to be okay with it. So it doesn't come without challenge, but it's just so beautiful. And like I find now seeing Jude and Bowie a bit older and they are such great little buddies. They have their moments, but I just think that sibling relationship is so, so valuable and precious. And yeah, I'm in camp, just go for it, do it.
You're going to have four then?
Oh, if my husband would allow me. If I use my rational brain, I think that I know that I'm at capacity, but if I was to only think with my heart, I could have more kids for sure. I don't feel done, but anyways, I think I'm done.
I think it's normal to feel scared though.
Yeah.
Like it's a change again. And then I think sometimes you feel more scared after you've had your first because then you kind of know what you're in for again. I remember naively going into all of mine, not feeling scared, but then being quite pregnant and being like, what have I done? When you realize, oh, I'm actually getting sleep. Why am I doing this again? Why am I putting myself through this again? But I think it's important to remember it's short term.
Yeah.
The hardness is short term. It's for the long term game. So I think if it's something that you want and it's okay financially and you both want it, just go. There's never going to be a right time.
Yeah. And that was another question that we had, like what's the ideal time frame between having another baby after having the first baby? And I feel like there's probably no right answer. It would depend on your circumstances. It would depend on, you know, what you have going on as a family, what your other children are like, you know, how well you feel like you're coping, whether or not your cycle returns.
Yeah.
There's so many variables there. And I know people who have a really, really small age gap. Like I've got a girlfriend who's got three under three. I just think, oh my gosh, like, yeah. How? Because they're basically, it's like having three babies or, you yeah. know, people, I heard of this girl and she had one baby and then fell pregnant a few months later with twins. So she had three babies under one.
My God.
I think like, but you do it. Like, you, I guess you just deal with what's in front of you. And then on the other hand, I've got friends who have a much larger age gap and they've found that to be really good because the older children can help with the younger children and everything in between. So I don't think there's a right or wrong. There's only what I know. Like I've got about, so there's 2 years and 3 months between the first two and then 2 years and 9 months between the second two, no, two and three with Bowie and Imogen, you know what I mean? And you know, that's just what I'm doing and that's fine.
It's going to differ for everybody, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like I had nearly 3 years between all of mine and I found for me, I needed that, and I always say there's a reason God didn't give me my period back any earlier because literally it came back and then I fell pregnant because I don't think I would have handled them much closer together because I know that I like work and I like to have independent time and time with my girlfriends and things, and I just wasn't ready to completely surrender to that time. Whereas I think some people are like, I just want to smash it out, surrender to this time, and, you know, have all of them very close together and then move on later. And so I think sometimes I think, oh my gosh, I have been parenting like young kids now for nearly 9 years. Like that feels like a long time. And I feel like too, like as much as I'm always like, I loved my age gap, Flynn now is nearly nine. And then I have a 2 year old. I feel like I'm parenting.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in this weird little vortex at the moment of parenting where I'm going into tweendom, but I'm also in toddlerhood and it's a bit odd and it's like they're both kind of getting these big emotions now. I'm like, stop. So I don't know. It's funny. There's always going to be some kind of challenge no matter the age gap.
Yeah. Just go for it. If it's what you want and you feel ready, then, and I guess that's the other thing. And another question that we had, like how to get your period back without weaning, like there can be factors like that, or sorry, not on that question, but even if you start trying, like some people don't conceive right away. So I think as much as we can plan for this and have our intention, it's not always within our control. So just go with the flow.
The period flow.
Yes. Well, I mean, on that really there's not really a lot that you can do because like for some women, there can be little tweaks that you could make either to what they're eating or the amount of exercise they're doing, or, you know, if there's a lot of stress or, you know, sometimes if there are like, I mean, hormonal imbalances when you're breastfeeding, it's difficult to know, like, because when you're breastfeeding, there are so many hormonal fluctuations related to the breastfeeding. So I know like for you, Luca, you pretty much didn't get your period back until you weaned completely, except with Will.
With Will, I got it back a little bit earlier. Messy. Maybe God knew it was my last baby and it didn't matter anymore.
That's so funny. And I had it.
Although like, Jessica has not yet had the snip, so touch wood.
Ooh. 2024.
I know. But yeah, the other two, I think also they were just such bad sleepers. They fed so much in the night that, but even when I night weaned Florence, she was still waking up a lot and I just didn't get a period at all until she had fully finished feeding.
Yeah. And I guess you don't want to play around too much depending on the age of your child. Like, yeah, I'd say that's a question. If you're looking to do anything to influence your hormones, definitely book in with the girls in the clinic. They can support you. But for a lot of people, weaning is the thing that will allow them to ovulate again. And and that is, I guess, purposeful from the body. And at the same time, some people, you know, at only a few weeks postpartum get their period back, which that, not to say that there's anything wrong or that that was not purposeful from the body. Like it just, yeah, I guess these are the inherent differences that we have. And some things are modifiable and some things are not. So
Seek bodies are clever.
Yeah. Seek some individualized guidance if you need help there.
How about, this is a good question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is a microwave safe to occasionally heat up baby's food?
Yeah. Absolutely. It depends how you look at it. So, you know, we as a family, we don't have a microwave. I've never really felt overly drawn to it. There's definitely occasions where I'm like, oh, this is the time that it's really useful when there's something you want to heat up and you don't want to turn the oven on and wait for that, or it doesn't, you know, lend itself to going into a saucepan. For me, it's, you know, I just, I don't know. I feel like I don't love the idea of heating food with radiation, but at the same time, it doesn't destroy nutrients. Like, there is a lot of research, like from a safety perspective, you're going to be getting a well-heated food, as long as, I mean, if it's a baby's portion, then I would assume it's not massive. That's the main thing from a food safety perspective. You want to make sure it's well heated the whole way through. So it's not like, I know sometimes with a microwave, it'll heat on the outside, but the inside's still cold. So as long as you've reached that appropriate temperature in all parts of the food, then it's totally fine. In terms of, yeah, nutrient loss, it's really, really minimal. Any heating of food is going to lose some nutrients. And then the whole idea about, like, yeah, I guess the radiation aspect, to be honest, I haven't actually looked into it really deeply because I just kind of felt like, oh, nah, that's not for me. So I'm happy to park it, but it's not something that I would strongly recommend for or against. Yeah, you got to go with what's right for your family.
I think
do you guys
too,
have a microwave?
Yeah, you do. We do. Yeah. I don't use it heaps often, but I'm always thankful when I have it, when I do need it. But we actually have my husband's work one. It's like a $20 banger. Does a terrible job, but anyway, because I'm just like, I don't want to buy a new one. But anyway,
yeah.
I just think too, sometimes a microwave is either, like, it's either use a microwave for a nice nutrient dense meal to reheat that, or what's the alternative that, you know, something not as nutrient dense, use the microwave.
Yeah, totally.
Don't be afraid of it.
Yeah, it's totally about balance.
What age can I give my toddler home-brewed kombucha?
That is an interesting question. And again, it's a pretty vague answer because it would very much depend on the alcohol content. Mm. So some home-brewed kombucha would have a lot of alcohol and some would have not that much, depending on your SCOBY, how long it's been fermented. I've never made it, so I'm not a fermentation expert by any stretch. But yeah, I guess if you have any way of measuring that, I guess the other thing would be you just want to ensure that you do have the right microbes colonized, but I think it's pretty, like, it sort of looks after itself. Obviously, if you're noticing any mold, then don't drink that, but that's for adults, not just babies. I guess, yeah, hard to say. Do you have thoughts?
I guess the thing with homemade kombucha, yeah, the main thing's the alcohol. I know when I used to make it, mine used to turn alcoholic pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You can buy an alcohol tester. They're just really expensive. And I think that's the thing when you buy a store-bought one is they're tested for alcohol. And so it's controlled. The other thing too is it's caffeine.
Yeah.
So, you know, kombucha is made with black tea, and so that's something to be mindful of is, do you want your baby having any more caffeine? Because I know I didn't want mine having any more parties at night. I generally prefer to use something like a kefir, just caffeine free for babies.
Yeah, and you could make homemade, you know, milk kefir or water kefir.
It's actually easier to make. I used to make water kefir a lot, and it's really easy to make because you don't have to deal with the SCOBY.
Yeah, and then I guess for if you are making kombucha at home and you really want to give it to your child, then probably as like a very loose guide, like over 12 months, but, you know, use your discretion. You'd know your own like product better than we do. So yeah, small amounts maybe, but probably use those other fermented drinks as a starting place.
Yep. So low tox cleaning, what do you recommend? We were actually just talking about this before we came on air.
I love, I'm trying to think, I'm like scanning mentally our laundry and under sink cupboard. So Koala Eco, I love their products. We use them a lot. Basisto's is another one that we've always used. And probably they're the main two, to be honest. They would cover all of the needs. Also good old vinegar.
Bicarb soda.
Yeah.
I swear I use bicarb soda for everything.
Yeah.
They buy it in bulk.
They are great as well. You don't need, you know, a million different products, and especially when we're thinking about our little people and crawling and spending lots of time on the ground, I think if we can avoid anything that's got a lot of chemicals in it, then personally I think that's good. Yeah, there would be my top two brands and then, good old vinegar and bicarb.
I think I'd be the same. The only thing I would add to those two is we use Try Nature for the, for their wood. We have a lot of timber in our house, so we use that for our timber. And sometimes we use essential oils.
Yeah,
in things as well. Like I made like a mold spray with cloves and things, which I used to spray my old caravan. to keep mold at bay. And I also like spraying that in the bathroom on the tiles.
Yeah.
Which you could just look up a recipe. We actually have a low, I guess a living low tox episode with Alex Stewart from Low Tox Life. I don't know what episode. It was pretty early on. So if you want to scroll down and find that, but we can link it in the show notes as well. We've had quite a few questions as well as about toilet training. This is absolutely not my area of expertise. Me or something either. That I'm dealing with at the moment with Will. So when I toilet trained Flynn, it was on his own accord because he saw his cousin who was the same age. She toilet trained herself very quickly and easily. So he decided he wanted to, but he was awful. He took, I reckon, 9 months of weeing and pooing himself because he was so busy that he just never stopped. And it was, anyway, he was too early, I think.
Yeah.
He was over two. But then my daughter, Florence, she did it herself as well, but she was really easy. She didn't like being dirty. And so I think she was around two.
Yeah.
Will's 2.5 and he still has no idea. And I'm, to be honest, not pushing it because I just think, oh, what's the rush? I'll do it when you're ready.
Yeah. Yeah, we are definitely not experts here either. My intention was to be child-led. However, that just kept getting later and later and later and later. And then the older that Jude got, I think he started getting some like nervousness around it. Mm-hmm. And so we in the end had to, you know, kind of do a countdown and be like, okay, this is the last day of wearing nappies, you're going to wear undies. And then he was on board with the countdown, but then when it got to the day of wearing undies, he was really, really, really distressed about that, which...
Actually, I remember these.
Yeah, just it was flashback. A big deal because I started feeling... I was feeling not good about it as well because he was getting to an age where like kids much younger than him were toilet trained and he has a lot of friends who are a bit older and so they were starting to ask why he's still wearing nappies and I think I'm very sensitive. Like he had no idea, he didn't care, but I felt very sensitive to him being like ostracized or bullied or anything like that. So it was not great, but we realized because he kept saying to us, I don't want to wear the undies. And we thought he was meaning like, I don't want to not wear a nappy. He literally didn't want to wear undies. So when we first toilet trained him, he just wouldn't wear undies. He'd wear his pants or shorts or whatever. And that was it. And I think it, like I should have probably understood that more literally, like the undies were probably really uncomfortable or, anyway, so we got there with him and he, once he got it, he was fine. It was just like getting over that barrier of, I think he thought it was going to be difficult to use the toilet or he was worried about it for whatever reason, but he did one wee, one poo and that was it. He's never had an accident. Bowie, on the other hand, she toilet trained earlier, but she's a little bit more carefree and like sounds a touch like Flynn. Like she's been great. We actually only started toilet training her once Imogen arrived. So it's pretty recent. But she doesn't really care if she has an accident. So she's just, she gets distracted and she's funny. I found recently she'll come up to me and she'll be like, I need a cuddle. And like, she's stomping her feet. I'm like, do you actually need to do a wee? And she's like, no, I need a cuddle. I'm like, I think you need to go and do a wee. Or she'll say, I'm cold. I'm like, do you need to do a poo? And she's like, no, I'm cold. And it's like 35 degrees outside. So I don't know, for whatever reason, she like holds off doing those things. And, I don't have any advice. I feel like I've not done a good job in this area.
Oh, it's tricky. There's the big little feelings. They have a toilet training course. I haven't actually seen it, but a lot of people recommend their course. So that might be something worthwhile having a look at.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And like someone had asked about that elimination communication. I've never explored that. I feel like I can tell when Imogen's about to do a poo, but it's third child. Poor darling. She'd be lucky to get her nappy changed in a timely fashion. So
yes,
I'm not an expert on that one.
Not anything I've ever tried either.
We'll be back after this short break.
Today's episode has been brought to you by Taste Bubs. We get so many questions around introducing allergens here at Boob to Food, like how to introduce them, what foods we should use to introduce them, and how often we should be incorporating them into our little one's diet. And this company, Taste Bubs, founded by two doctors, is just incredible because it really takes all of that mental load out of it for you and has included 7 of the top allergens in their pack.
Yeah, I think it's such a clever idea. It's overwhelming at the best of times introducing the allergens, and the packs are actually a 4-week program so that you can introduce those common food allergens to your baby and hopefully reduce the risk of food allergies with that easy, regular and early introduction. So it doesn't cover off every single one of those top allergens, but it does include almond, cashew, walnut, peanut, soy, egg and sesame. So some of those key ones in a really, really easy to use sachet form that you can mix with other foods that Bub's already eating.
I love that the only ingredient is the allergen as well, so you know that that's the only thing that you're testing. You can use the discount code BOOB2FOOD for 15% off your order from the 18th of December until the 18th of February. You can visit their website, TasteBubs, that's TasteBubs.com.au, to place your order today.
Now let's get back to today's episode.
Someone's asked, best non-dairy milk for an occasional comfort bottle if I'm not at home and misses a breastfeed at 18 months. We get asked this question a lot, like what's the best alternative milk to cow's milk? And obviously if you want to offer cow's milk, that's fine. I will say your baby doesn't need a bottle after 12 months and we don't want to introduce one either if they're not used to having that. So if you have a breastfed baby after 12 months, you don't need to introduce a bottle. They can have a cup of milk if they need, but that's, you know, and if they're already having a bottle, then obviously that's something that you can continue and gradually wean off. But you definitely don't need to introduce one. We have a weaning course, a masterclass on our website if this is something that you're going through or interested in. But if you do feel like you need to give something when you're not there, maybe it'd be to go to sleep or whatever. I don't know, what would you, I used to give coconut milk.
Yeah.
What would be your
recommendation? Yeah, we'd go coconut. I mean,
my kids didn't tolerate dairy, so I should say that's why I didn't do a dairy milk or a goat's or anything, because my kids got diarrhea.
I think the important thing with the alternative milks is, you know, they're not at all filling a nutritional gap.
No.
So most of them are predominantly water. So if it's just for a comfort bottle, then go with what your child likes, and just I would make sure that it doesn't have like a lot of added sugar or heaps of thickeners or gums or stabilizers, those sorts of things. But aside from that, it's like pretty like much of a muchness with all of the alternatives. So
except for oat milk, it's so high in carbs,
remember? Oh yeah, yeah,
because it's made from a starch. So then you're having, which is a but fine again, like, but for, then
yeah,
you know, you probably, if we're talking about balancing meals, yes, you know, you'd want to balance that with some fat and protein. If it's part of a meal, then that's totally fine. Or a smoothie where you've got other things in it. But if your little one's just relying on oat milk all the time with no fats or proteins, then they're having a lot of, I guess, what they call like a naked carbohydrate, which turns into sugar. So that's just something to be mindful of with oat milk, which I didn't actually know.
Yeah.
Our dietitian Renee told me when I was drinking an oat milk coffee, and I was like, what? I had no idea.
Yeah. But again, I think like if it was one comfort bottle of oat milk, and like we have to worry too much about it.
No.
But yes, definitely if it was all the time. Somebody asked about allergens. So the 14-month-old had a blood test to show they had an allergy to egg and milk. And is that definite, or are there other options to explore? So that is definite. If they've had a blood test and they've found that they've got that like IgE reaction to those specific food proteins, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's lifelong. A lot of children do grow out of their allergies, or they can kind of go through that process of, you know, having them reintroduced. But it's not something like you'd want to be speaking to your doctor, or if they've referred you onto an allergist or a pediatrician. But yes, I wouldn't, like, I would take that as definite and then, yeah, get some guidance. I'm hoping and assuming that they would have pointed you in the right direction and not just said, avoid that forevermore.
Well, good news is both of them are often outgrown.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah,
especially milk, which is good.
Yeah. It's not a guarantee, but it is like highly likely, especially if you do go through that sort of step-by-step reintroduction. But yes, that would be definite.
Mm-hmm. when do I start offering snacks to my baby eating 3 solid meals per day? So snacks don't need to be introduced until after 12 months of age. We want to prioritize the meals. Obviously, if you're out and about and you want to give a bit of food every now and then or whatever, it's totally fine, but they don't need them as regular. And it's important to know that their milk feeds are also considered snacks. So they are having quite a lot of snacks, whether that be breast milk or formula, and then their 3 solid meals a day. And then after 12 months, if you want to introduce snacks, you can. You don't have to. Like, snacks aren't... what's the word, like a hard and fast rule that they have to have. A lot of people don't offer snacks at all and just prioritize the meals. And if you do have a little one that doesn't eat very much at their meals, then that might be something to work on. Otherwise, I don't know. I know my little one, all he wants to do is snack at the moment. Yeah. So I'm trying to rein in the snacks and try and bring it back to the main meals.
I know. I'm such a grazer. I've had to really kind of be conscious of this having kids, because if it were up to me, we'd just graze all day. But I think having set meal times and prioritizing like breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then we do have snacks as well. But yeah, they're not an always thing. And especially with young babies, when they're having, like, depending on their nap schedule as well, sometimes it's funny, like the meal times. So they don't necessarily have enough awake hours in the day to have like 3 meals and snacks. So yeah, I don't think you have to be strict around it either way. Just if you want to give your child a snack and they seem to be hungry for it, then it's fine. And if not, then you don't have to be trying to force it in at any point.
Yeah. Someone's asked, how do you safely, environmentally friendly freeze food? I don't buy plastic wrap, favorite containers. I freeze my stuff mainly in glass.
Yeah.
Glass jars, basically any like leftover jars, I'll just freeze things in and keep them. Or I do have some silicon bags that I freeze some things as well. Like, I find broth really handy, like large amounts to freeze in the silicon bags, because I can kind of do it flat.
Yeah.
But yeah, the glass, just be mindful if you're freezing in glass, you need to leave room for expansion. And also when you're defrosting it, don't like run it under hot water or anything, because it will crack. So other than that, glass is fine.
Yeah, but use glass jars as well, or Pyrex containers. And then actually when I prepared a lot of meals going into the postpartum period, I was really fortunate because we obviously have a food business, a frozen meal delivery service. So I sent these big batches of like kitchery and soup down to the kitchen with Mike, and he packaged it up. We have like, compostable packaging, but I know not everybody has access to that. So yeah, I would say, and we also do have some silicon. We had these like compactable silicon containers. They were pretty good. They can go flat like when you're storing them, and then pop them up to fill them. But yeah, glass is usually my go-to as well.
Someone has said, how the hell do you filter out what to listen to? Research gives me anxiety about the stats of toxins, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so interesting. I feel like I've done a big like 180 on this in a way. I definitely still, you know, I'm interested in research and interested in understanding the human body and the effect that everything has on it. And at the same time, I think a lot of it comes back to common sense. And there's a lot of things that we don't have research for, or that we don't have good research for, or that we can't understand. And so just like, I try to peel it back to like what we know is true. And actually a question that I sometimes not pose to myself, but like I've pondered before and said to a few people, is like, if tomorrow you woke up and someone said, okay, there is no longer any like medications, there's no pharmaceuticals, there's no like, there's no medical interventions, what would you do? And I think a lot of us know how to look after our body to make sure that we don't get chronic health conditions, or when we have an acute health condition, we know what to do. I'm not wishing that there's no medical like interventions, don't like take it that way. But you know, like if we were to think, okay, I need to keep my body well, what are the things that I would do? And I'm pretty sure that if we were faced with the actual possibility of not having access to, you know, medical help if we needed it, a lot of people be like, okay, well, I'm going to drink good, clean water, and I'm going to eat whole foods. I'm going to eat fruits and veggies. I'm going to try to minimize like processed stuff, and or maybe not. Maybe some people will be like, oh, well, I'll just eat what I like and get on with it. And that's fine. But I just feel like we do intuitively know a lot of this. And it's so interesting, even from a naturopathic perspective, like a lot of herbal remedies, I know it's not what the question was, but like a lot of herbal medications or, you know, remedies that traditional cultures used, when we've now gone in and researched them and looked at the constituents that are there, there's compounds that do have actions that they wouldn't have known about, but they've kind of got to that point anyway. So I don't know, like garlic, for example, it's like it is a really strong antimicrobial, and they didn't have the ability to look at that under a microscope, but people knew that when you consumed a lot of garlic, it helped with infections of whatever description. So I think we can trust ourselves and also trust that the body is very resilient and very, very capable. Yes, we live in a world where there's a lot of toxins that weren't here, you know, decades ago. And if we, yeah, are taking care of ourselves, mostly like getting sunshine, getting fresh air, fresh water, doing the best we can with our food, sleeping, being happy, like all of those things play a role.
Stress, that's a big
one.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to that because, yeah, we get a lot of questions like, oh, this person has said eggs are bad. This person has said cassava flour is bad. This person has said there's lead in this. This person has said this, you know, and I get sent things all the time from another influencer or whatever you call them in this space who has shown another research article.
Yeah.
You know, or someone will say, I've heard you shouldn't eat red meat. And then someone will say, you should be a carnivore. So you should be. And it's just like, well, I don't know who to listen to. Yeah. And I think the biggest thing is to know is that these days you can find research on whatever you want to find research on. Whether it be good research or not is a different story. Yeah. But also research is funded. And so they're probably not going to fund a study on, I don't know, there might be one on garlic. I'm trying to think like the benefit of something that's not going to benefit someone else because why would someone research, like put money into that?
And I just feel as well like all research in this kind of space when it relates to the human body is inherently flawed because you can't control all of the variables. Mm. You literally can't control like how happy that person is, how connected to their community they feel, how much sleep they're getting. Like there's so many other variables that do influence the state of our health. And while, yes, we can look at research and like obviously you can see patterns and so you can make assumptions and you can learn from that, I just think we can't take anything as gospel. And I don't know if there's any research study anywhere that is like conclusively this does this 100% of the time. And I mean, maybe if it's relating to gravity or something like that, you like drop the ball and 100% of the time on earth, it falls to the ground. But like when it comes to food, when it comes to health, there's just, there's so many variables. So I think take it with a grain of salt, learn from it. And I don't know, I really have a bugbear about research because I have a love-hate relationship. I find it so fascinating, and then it also drives me absolutely batty that people are like, where's the research for, I don't know, eating an avocado? It's like, do we need that? Like, is that where we're at these days? Or people like, that's not evidence-based. I'm like, yeah, but then the same like people who are like, well, don't do that because it's not evidence-based. There's things that are evidence-based, like Mediterranean diet has a lot of evidence for being, you know, good for supporting like reduction of inflammation and chronic health conditions. But are those people eating a Mediterranean diet? Like, no, we all have our individual preferences and what we have access to. And anyway, I'm not going to rant any more about research. Take it with a grain of salt.
Different topic. Yeah. Do you allow kids nudie at the beach or camping? How to keep them safe from weirdos?
Do you want to answer that first?
I feel like I'm going to be shunned for my answer. I don't. With my younger, I don't know how to explain. No, I don't. My older two have worked it out on their own and do not like being nude in front of anyone. And so they just don't do it. So I don't have that issue. But I think if Flynn or Florence were, then yes, I probably would at the age that they are at.
You would let them?
No, like, sorry, I would make sure that they were covered up.
Yeah.
So they're nearly 9 and nearly 6.
Yeah.
I think if they were to be that way inclined, then yes, I probably would when we're out, if there's people around.
Mm.
Will is always nude purely because he wants to be and he won't keep clothes on. Mm. And so for me, I just sort of judge the scene where we're at.
Yeah.
Like, if I feel like there's some people staring or, you know, odd looking people around, then yeah, I'll put clothes on him.
Mm.
A lot of the time I don't because we're just around friends, but that's why I'm like, I'm probably going to be shunned because I'm probably just being oblivious to the world that we live in. And I know that it's like that, but I also don't want to like, it's hard because my husband's really like put clothes on all the time. He's really funny about it. He always wants them to, you know, well, they'll be in the pool at my house and my daughter will be nude there and he'll be like, put clothes on. I'm like, there's no one here. We're in our pool. He's like, someone might look over the fence. I'm like, who? But yeah, we just live in kind of these different realms, but I think he listens to more things than me. I like to live in a little world of oblivion that nothing bad ever happens. So
yeah.
How about you?
Well, Jude would be mortified to be naked in public. So I've never had to cross that bridge. Yeah, no, he would definitely not want to do that. But then at home in the backyard, like, yeah, definitely, like, they would, you know, run through the sprinkler naked or something like that. So, yeah, I haven't really had, I don't know, yeah, kind of haven't thought about it too much. Like, my kids would wear swimmers at the beach. Part of that, I guess, is sun safety. Like, I'm very pasty. So Jude, he's fine. He's really olive, but he, yeah, wouldn't want to not wear swimmers. Bowie's a little bit more fair. So I've always had her in like the long sleeve, like swimmers. And camping, like, I can't imagine that they would, either of them would want to be running around naked at like a caravan park, and we are yet to go off grid. If it was somewhere like that, like off grid camping, then definitely I'd be happy with them to not have clothes on. But otherwise, yeah, at the beach, I might get them changed though. Like, I wouldn't necessarily, unless same as you, I felt like there was an uncomfortable, you know, group of people. But I would also do it discreetly. Like, I'd, you know, they've got those little hooded towels, so I'd probably keep that on and change them discreetly, just, I guess, because you never know.
No, you never know, which is why I said I'll probably get shunned for my answer. No. So don't take that as gospel. Someone has said, how to help the transition to a big boy bed for a two-year-old. Please and thank you. Love your podcast. I thought I'd start that bit.
Lovely.
Thank you. Nice. I'm trying to remember how I did the other two transition, because we attempted this the other night when we were camping because we forgot the porta cot, and it was an absolute nightmare. The first night was good because Will was so tired that he fell asleep. The second night, he just kept coming out, walking out in his little sleeping bag.
Oh, honey.
Got to like nine, hello, he hadn't even had a nap. Anyway, so we ended up just putting him in our bed. I honestly cannot remember what I did. I remember Flynn was quite young. He was like just over two, and he was climbing out of his cot. So we just thought, let's just get rid of it because he's not staying in it anyway. What's the difference? And so for me, the bed didn't really make a difference because he was already climbing out. So then he just kept climbing out as well of the bed. And then I think the novelty sort of wore off and he just sort of stopped. But I can't remember what we did. And then with Florence, we actually traveled around Australia in the caravan. We sold nearly everything we owned. So we had sold the cot and everything. And so when we came back, she was pretty much smack on two. And so we were like, well, what's the point of buying another cot? We won't. And so she just went into a bed. But she was fine because we'd been in the caravan bed the whole time. So anyway,
I'm no help here because
I'm about to do with it though. We will.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
We co-slept. And so Jude was, he would have been over four when we got him into his own bed, and we inherited bunk beds from our neighbors. So he was really excited because it was used to be his friend's bed. And I think he was ready at that stage. Like, he wanted to go and sleep in his own bed, so it was never an issue. He did come into our room a lot though. Like, he'd always start in his bed, and then at some point in the night he would come in. And then Bowie, once Jude went into his own bed, she was quite interested in that too. So we ended up getting her a little bed as well, and they share a room. And she actually has never come into our bed since, but Mike ends up in her bed most nights. I think that must have happened when I was pregnant, so that was probably part of it. I don't know. I feel like they were both a bit older though. So, Bowie would have been, she'll be three in a couple of weeks. And so she was probably 2.5 when she went into her own bed. But yeah, I don't know. It was not really an issue or a big event. But yeah. As I said, Mike's in there anyway.
The beds from the Perk Shop, they sponsored one of our episodes, P-U-R-C,
yeah.
Perk Shop. They're really cute because they're really low to the ground, which is nice, and they're just, and then they kind of can grow with your child, which is a really cute sort of transition bed.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, when we need to do it with Will, I'm putting it off because he actually hasn't learned how to climb out of his cot, so I don't feel the need just yet to do it. But when he gets to that point, or if he gets too big for the cot, and I actually would just love to get rid of the cot because last child, you know, I'm trying to clear everything out. We normally put the bed rail up.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of acts as that bit of a barrier, and then just keeping everything else the same. I'm pretty sure from memory I had to like sit with the other kids until they fell asleep for the first few times, just sort of held their hand. And that's one nice thing about the bed is you can just lie in the bed easily quite with them instead of the cot. You don't have to climb into the cot. And just until they got used to it, and then sort of transitioned myself out of the room and doing things on the bed, like reading books on the bed and things like that, sort of having that wind down all on the bed.
Yeah. We still lie with the kids to go to sleep. So not Jude, but he's in the same room as Bowie. So, one of us will lie down with Bowie until she falls asleep and Jude's there as well. It's not like they have their own beds and we say goodnight and they hop in. Like, it's still very much us involved.
Yeah, I don't know how you do that. I would fall asleep every night.
Mike has to set an alarm, and sometimes like I will fall asleep but I'll not realise I've fallen asleep, and I'll come out and he'll be like, hey, were you asleep? I'm like, no, but I'm like in that groggy and it's like 8:30. I'm like, oh, I must have been. Someone has said finding joy in the baby phase of motherhood, refluxy baby equals no sleep and huge stress.
I remember having this with Flynn. He was such an unsettled baby and it was hard, and I remember being I didn't really have any mum friends, so I remember it being hard. All I can say is, like we said, it does go quick.
Yeah.
It's just really hard the long days that you're in. But I would say just try and find something for you every day. Try and get out the house if you can, like go for a walk, get some sunshine, get a coffee. If you have any friends, like for me, that's what I need to – everyone's going to be different here. But for me, I know what makes me feel happy, and that's seeing my friends. And so even if I'm feeling so tired and my baby's just cranky and everything, if I can just go for a walk or go see them, I'm a much better human. And then I think also prioritizing time for yourself as well to recharge, because you can't do that all day and have no time to yourself. So just making it – I guess – trying to communicate, I'm saying this like I'm an expert, I don't do this, I should do this. Trying to communicate with your partner beforehand, like before, you know, you lose the plot, and say to them that morning maybe in a text, like, I'm having a hard day.
Yeah.
When you get home, can you take baby X, whatever the name is, so I can go for a walk, or so I can clear my head, or so I can have a bath, or anything that's for you, because that's what you're going to need to get through. And then also not being afraid to ask for help.
Yeah. And I'd just add to that, like, don't beat yourself up for not loving it all the time.
Yeah.
It's totally okay to be like, I love my child, I love being a mum, and this is really shit right now. And like, you don't have to at every moment, be like in that oxytocin love bubble. Sometimes it's really hard and you're going to really not like it. And that's okay. Like, don't beat yourself up. Definitely, it's okay to prioritize your needs, and it's really crucial that you prioritize your needs, because that will allow you to better, I guess, hold that space for your baby and, you know, deal with the lack of sleep. And where you can outsource, definitely lean on the people around you. And if you don't feel like you've got those people in your life, then see if there's a way that you can make some new connections or hire help if there is, you know, if you have resources to do that as well. I actually, in a past life, worked as a night nanny, so I didn't even know that job existed until I did it. I worked
this
as
is another one of your. We should just do an episode on all your past lives and jobs, because you've got many. Oh my gosh, how nice would a night nanny be?
I loved it as a job as well. Like, it was it was really quite nice. Like, Anyway, so that people out there exist that can help you overnight as well. And also, if Bub has reflux, there's things that you can do there too. So we did do an episode on unsettled babies with Dr. Billy Garvey. It wasn't specifically about reflux, but that's obviously a part of it. So I'd listen back to that one. And then also the girls in our clinic can help there too. So if you haven't already had some support from a practitioner, then definitely know that there's things that you can explore both with your GP or pediatrician. And then if you want to look more holistically as well.
How much do you spend on groceries a week?
Oh my gosh, I don't really know. So I know a while ago I was absolutely horrified when we finally, you know, kind of did a calculation and it was like, I think I was often spending like $500 a week just at Coles, and that was like,
oh my gosh.
I know, I'm a snacker. It's really bad.
In one hit? Or
no,
did you go
no,
a few
no.
times?
So we have one pretty close to our house, so I'd go just randomly. I'd be like, yeah, if the kids were like, I want, I don't know, bacon and eggs, you're like, okay, let's go and get bacon and eggs. So it was that kind of like multiple trips. So we'd do like a grocery shop, and then it was all the extra bits and pieces, or we'd be catching up with friends and I'd buy all these snacks to take and share and like that sort of thing. So since that revelation, we've really peeled it back, and now we get like an organic fruit and veggie box once a week from Pharmacy Organics, who I absolutely love. The produce is amazing. I think it's $75 for the family box, and it's a really decent amount of fruit and veg. And so that will last us for the week. I might do a bit of a fruit top up. And then we usually also get like a quarter of a cow, but that's like probably every 6 to 8 months. We don't eat beef every single day. So like that lasts, you know, a long time because we're not consuming it all the time. And then, I don't know, maybe it would be another $200 at like Coles or Woolies or somewhere like that, I think. I don't know, I'm not good at budgeting or like keeping track of finances. But I'd say let's call it $300 to $400 a week maybe, give or take. What about you?
Yeah, I feel like if I actually added it up, I'd probably have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I spend $300, and Jesse's like, no, you don't. You spend heaps more than that. That's the one time. Then we go many other times. Our issue, though, I actually don't think we would spend more than $400, but our issue is we go out a lot. So we, like, most Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, we would eat out once, twice a day because we're out and just doing things. And so that's more our where we would spend a lot of money is eating out.
But, we don't do heaps of eating out. Like, I might get sushi with the kids, you know, once a week, but we rarely would go out for a dinner or anything like that, more so at this time of year. But, yeah, I think probably where I find it tricky to track is that I would do things like, you know, do an order with part and parcel, and it's like I get like some pantry staples. So you buy them all in one big hit, but then you're working through it. So I don't know what the final amount per week would be. But definitely I've reined back on the snacking.
Yeah, snacks are
less
the killer.
Snack foods, making more things at home and trying to actually, we did an episode with Alex from Cornersmith. And we talked about like food wastage, and I think getting out of that mentality of like, what do I feel like? And instead being like, okay, what do I have? And just getting creative. And yeah, that's probably helped to not be spending so much. It's really tough.
It is tough. I know. We do the ethical farmer's order. And I'll do that every 2 months. And then it feels like my groceries aren't much, but I've done that big one.
Yeah. So you've got all the meat there.
And then we try and go to the farmer's market, but then we're away a lot of weekends, so we miss that. And anyway, I do have had to stop shopping at Harris Farm because
I can't go there.
One box is like $100.
Oh my goodness. I don't think
I love
I've
Harris
ever
Farm,
got out
by
of
the way.
There.
It's just so expensive.
I think the like smallest amount that I've spent there is like $75. I'll be like, I'm just going to pop in for one thing. And then next minute I'm like, it's just so many nice foods.
I know. That's my problem
I'm
too.
A really good consumer. Like, and the way that you walk through, it's like you get the staples and then you're like, ooh, walking past the chocolates and, oh, I'm walking past the like fancy yogurts and I am terrible.
I'm the same, don't worry. Someone's asked, once you introduce an allergen, how often do you need to keep it in the diet?
So this one we get asked a lot, and the recommendation is to keep it in regularly. So, you know, a few times a week. It's tricky though, because when you think about, there's the top 9 allergens and not all families consume those foods regularly anyway, like shellfish. Like I would very rarely, I would love to have shellfish more regularly, but I don't.
Yep.
And, you know, for example, some families might be plant-based and so they might have introduced egg and dairy and fish and shellfish to tick off the allergens, but then they don't consume those foods as a family. Or like we predominantly eat gluten-free and so we don't have like a lot of wheat at home. So, you know, that is the recommendation to keep them in. I don't know specifically, is it?
They don't have, there's no enough research on it.
Yeah.
There's no research on an exact amount. Number. I'm sure that'll be the next stem of research.
But again, like I said with my research rant,
yeah, that's
there's just
right.
so many variables. And I think it actually, yeah, we can again look at this and be like, right, we understand that once the immune system's had exposure, it may be helpful to continue that exposure. I know definitely there has been some research around doing elimination diets, and I think it was about 30% of the children who had a food removed from their diet, and this was for eczema, they then did develop an allergy to that food. But of those, I don't even know if it was 30%, maybe it was 13. I should probably check before I say actual percentages, disregard any number that I just said. A portion of those children, but not the majority, did develop an allergy. And yeah, it's there's no guarantee whichever way you go. So I think you've just got to look at your family circumstances. Don't stress yourself by trying to force each of those 9 allergens into the diet if they're not typically on your plate. If you do have a strong family history of allergy, you might want to be more specific about it. But I think otherwise, just do your best to rotate them within your, you know, normal, healthy, varied family diet.
Yeah, I think that's the main gist. Like, don't introduce peanuts the 3 times and then tick that off and then never again.
Yeah.
Just try and keep
it being
mindful.
But again, like, you know, you might have, well, Mike, like my husband, he hates peanuts. So if you've got a child who's like really doesn't like peanut butter or whatever, like, yeah, I don't know. There's all these other
Mike,
factors.
Who doesn't like peanuts?
I know.
Last question, what has been your favorite memory of 2023?
Oh, you can hear my favorite memory of 2023. Mine's so easy. Definitely the birth of Imogen, having her in our family. She's just so divine. But the birth itself, I loved. I really loved that birth. I love giving birth anyway, but it was a really special moment. And yeah, having her here is just, that's definitely the highlight for me.
Aww.
Yeah. What about you?
Mine's not easy.
Yeah.
I was trying to think and reflect when I saw this question come through, and I don't actually have a specific one. We've had a really busy year. When I actually was making one of those like Instagram reel, like, this is your highlight of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really rammed into a lot of like quality trips away with our good friends. And I feel like in the last, I mean, always last few years, but definitely in the last year, I feel like we've just really, we're definitely solidifying our friends a lot more and just really prioritizing time with them.
Yeah.
I think because life's really busy now and we're kind of phasing out of that mum kind of hang where you just sort of want to see anyone and get some kind of reprieve from talking to a baby. We're all kind of going to that next phase of life now.
And so many of the kids are at school, so it changes the dynamic.
Yeah.
And
it's like, and you've got to be careful like who you prioritize your time with, because I'm like, I just don't have time to spend with random people anymore or people that don't fill my cup. Or, and so that's been really nice when I reflected back, was just like heaps of core memories with our like crew, you know, camping and just doing things that we love, or girls trips, and just, yeah, that's been my core memory, I think, and just something that this year's brought is just us being closer together. Refinement.
Yeah. Oh, well, I feel lucky to have eaten up so much of your time this year.
You've been a huge part of it. Now leave. So time for a break. Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. And, yeah, tune in for another whole year next year. Yeah. Planned with lots of, yeah.
Yeah, enjoy lots Christmas great... and Happy New Year.
I know. Wow. Anyway, I'm so excited. So goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Boob to Food, the podcast. We hope this episode made you feel inspired, confident, and less overwhelmed in your parenting journey.
Head to the show notes for all the resources mentioned on today's episode. And if you loved this podcast, please remember to subscribe, rate, and review.
See you next week. Bye.